Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call's special San Francisco election series. Next Tuesday is Election Day. The next mayor of San Francisco could serve for 10 years and determine the future of the city. This is a very important race, and early voting has begun. Be sure to vote for at least two candidates. If your top choice does not get 50%, your second choice might win. On today's show, we are joined by former California State Senator Mark Leno. After serving 14 years in the California legislature in 2016, Senator Leno vacated his seat due to state term laws. During his tenure, Senator Leno authored 161 laws. His accomplishments include championing the expansion of gay rights, reforming the prison sentencing system, and raising California's minimum wage to $15 an hour. He was also a tireless advocate of single-payer health care. Mark Leno was elected to the California Senate in 2008. He represented the 11th District, which includes San Francisco and Daly City. From 2002 to 2008, he served in the California State Assembly, representing the 13th District. And before that, he served for 4.5 years on the San Francisco Board of Supervisors. He is endorsed by a number of officials and organizations, including United States Senator Kamala Harris, San Francisco Supervisor Aaron Peskin, the Affordable Housing Alliance, the Sierra Club, Unite Here Local 2, and the San Francisco Bay Guardian. And former Senator Mark Leno joins me in studio. Hi, Senator Leno. Thank you for coming in.
Rose, it is a real pleasure and honor to be back. And not only am I a huge fan of your show, of course, you do the most remarkable work, and you are a treasure to San Francisco, but a longtime supporter and listener of KALW. I don't know if you remember Alan Farley.
Oh, yes. We loved Alan.
Alan was extraordinary. And he had me on his show about 15 years ago when I was on the Board of Supervisors, and his show was My Favorite Things, and he invited me to bring six of my favorite pieces of music, and we could talk about it and play them for a full hour. And I found the CD of it recently.
That's great. I loved that show with Alan.
Yeah, we
miss Alan a lot. Well, next Tuesday's Election Day. It's almost here.
Is it next Tuesday?
It is next Tuesday. And if you win, you could serve for 10 years. This is such an important race. And I want to get a sense of how you're thinking. San Francisco is making international headlines about inequality. The average income of the top 1% averages $3.6 million in San Francisco. That is 44 times the average income of the bottom 99%. San Francisco now has the third most billionaires, of any city in the world. According to the San Francisco Rent Board, over the last 4 years, over 8,000 people have been evicted. Homeless encampments are growing. We have massive wealth gaps in this city. How do you explain how we got to this point?
That's a question that I'm asked everywhere I go around town right now, and there are no simple answers to it, though my campaign is based on change, that we need a new direction at City Hall, we need fundamental change, that the status quo is not working, that our crises of homelessness, housing affordability, increase in property crime, the mess in our streets, our immobility of crossing town, they're all out of control, and everyone knows it. So it is time for change. I have not been in city government for 16 years, and I am just as astounded and disappointed as everybody I talk to.
When we had on Jane Kim, she pointed to the decimation of HUD in the 70s. Angela Alioto pointed to tech. What are your thoughts? Because policy decisions really got us here. And you can't point to just one thing. But can you talk about a few things?
So Supervisor Kim is correct that the federal government used to participate in building housing and building affordable housing, and that just does not happen anymore. So that means local government, hopefully with the support of the state, has to deal with very problematic social ills. And yes, policy decisions get us here, but also policy decisions out of Washington, D.C. The tax scam that came out of the Republican Congress and this so-called president only makes the situation worse. and exacerbates the already existing phenomenon of income and wealth inequality. I'm reminded of a really important quote that Supreme Court Justice Louis Brandeis once said. This goes back to the 1930s, that we can have the concentration of great wealth in the hands of the few, or we can have democracy, but we can't have both. And we're seeing that put to the test right now. This is happening in front of our eyes, in our daily lives, and we see it. So there are no simple answers here, but many of these issues we're talking about are not unique to San Francisco. They're regional, they're state, they are even national. One of the things I believe San Francisco must do in a better fashion is working with our regional partners. Even if we could wave a magic wand and solve our homeless situation or solve our affordability, well, it would just be a magnet for everyone else. So we've got to make sure we're learning from best practices of Berkeley and Oakland and San Jose, they from us. We've got to join hands. It may even be a massive regional affordable housing bond, but there's got to be coordination.
As you say, this is not unique to San Francisco. There's Skid Row in Los Angeles gets national, even international headlines. We are seeing the homeless crisis increase in Sacramento. You served 14 years in the California legislature, the only person running for mayor who has served in Sacramento.
Yes.
One in five Californians is living in poverty. Massive wealth in this state.
Yes.
Right now, what are we, number five or six in terms of the largest economy in the world? How do you explain that as a former senator?
Again, international and national forces are upon us, but also we can do better here locally. And certainly one of the things I'm focused on when we talk about homelessness, which is the first thing I'm asked, no matter what part of town I'm in, what are you going to do about our homeless crisis? Overlaid with housing affordability, because homelessness is a housing problem. 70% of those living on our streets in San Francisco were living under a roof in San Francisco when they became homeless. So to the degree that we can keep those who have a home in their home, we're already dealing with the problem. And how is it that so many people are losing their homes? No cause evictions. You pay your rent on time. You're a good tenant. You're a good neighbor. And you get evicted for no cause. We have to stop that. And every affordable, keep in mind, our most valuable affordable housing stock is our rent-controlled units.
Right.
By legal definition, we cannot replace one because only those built before 1979 are rent-controlled. We cannot replace them. And so for every 10 affordable housing units we're building, we're losing six to demolition and eviction.
I want to press you just a little bit on how we got here, because
yes,
this is a state run by Democrats. This is a city run by Democrats. And yet, inequality just continues. People struggle to make ends meet. We have shameful levels of poverty. As someone who has served alongside other Democrats for a long time,
this is a conversation we've had, and I know you've focused on many times on your show.
Yes.
So I can refer back to some battles that I fought in Sacramento. We were successful in the first one I'll mention, and that was our $15 an hour minimum wage. For the first time, California's minimum wage will now pay a wage above the federal poverty line. No one working 40 hours a week should be living below the federal poverty line in poverty. And it's a very conservative measure of poverty because it doesn't account for the 30% higher cost of living here in California. It does not even have a line item for child care, which can be as expensive as your mortgage or your rent. So it's a very conservative level. And we finally were able to put an escalator in it so that it will never fall below the poverty line again, because we won't have to keep increasing it. But the California Chamber of Commerce, which does not only influence Republican legislative votes, but also some Democratic legislative votes, always claim that it's a job killer and will destroy our economy. Well, since we've raised our California minimum wage to $15 an hour, the unemployment rate has only gone down, and we've gone from the seventh to the sixth to the fifth largest economy in the world. So their arguments are false, but they make them nonetheless. I authored a bill that would have given authority to cities in California, requiring nothing of them, but giving them the authority by a vote of the people to enact a local income tax. New York City has a local income tax. Mm-hmm. California does not allow our cities to even consider it. With all the wealth in this city, that would be, and because of Prop 13, we have limited options to raise any kind of local money. I still think that that would be a very valuable tool for San Francisco.
And who would have to pay that local income tax?
It could be defined any way and constructed any way that the Board of Supervisors would want to put it before the voters.
If you become mayor, what would you fight for?
Well, the change in state law, and I know that Assemblyman Phil Ting has picked up where I've left off. We got it through the Assembly. This is going back over 10 years. It died in the Senate. But it's still a worthy tool for local government to have.
What kind of taxes do you agree with? Because so many taxes are regressive, where they hurt people who are poor, people who can barely make ends meet the most. And yet we have a lot of millionaires and billionaires in this city. Some of the most major corporations in the world are located here in San Francisco.
Another tax issue that I focused on in Sacramento, which was counter to the current at the time, Arnold Schwarzenegger had made the vehicle license fee into a campaign cause célèbre back in 2003. He ran on it, held big rallies where people would cheer as he dropped anvils on automobiles. It was pitiful how he was inflaming concerns. We all paid this vehicle license fee for 50 years. No one thought about it. But it was noticed that in the state of Virginia, a Democratic governor was recalled over the issue of vehicle license fee, and Republicans in California saw an opportunity and did just that. So on his first day in office, he rescinded what the legislature had done, which was to restore the vehicle license fee, which had been cut by 2/3 when the state had surplus money at the height of the dot-com boom. And that is, according to your definition, a very progressive tax measure. And I'll spell that out. It's really a sales tax on the purchase price of your automobile. So the higher the cost of your car, the more you pay, the lower, the less you pay. You can deduct 10% the value of the car every year you own it. So you own the car 5 years, you pay half of it. You own your car 10 years, you pay none of it. And you don't want to pay it, you don't own a car. So unlike the volatility of being dependent on the 1% personal income tax returns, vehicle license fee grows every year because the number of cars in California grows every year. So it's a dependable source of income, and it spreads the pain moderately, broadly, and that's a good tax form.
What will your relationship be like with tech? There were a lot of criticisms about former Mayor Ed Lee and his very close relationship with people like venture capitalist Ron Conway, who was in a lot of meetings about taxes. The San Francisco Chronicle wrote about this.
Yes.
What will your relationship be like?
I have said throughout the campaign that I'm not here to demonize any business sector, including tech, but everyone must pay his or her fair share. Everyone must play by the same rules, and everyone needs to obey the law. And unfortunately, we haven't seen that. Corporate citizenship still counts, and we're all in this together. We need to work together. It doesn't benefit any business sector to have the kind of disparity that we have right now and to have the kind of suffering we see on the streets. And it's all well and good. I certainly support those leaders in the philanthropic community, but that's not a sustainable form of funding city and county operations. That should be worked into our tax structure. And if people want to give philanthropically beyond that, that's wonderful, but we shouldn't depend upon the kindness and generosity of corporate titans to run our government.
Can you be more specific when you say they should pay their fair share? So you're the final mayoral candidate on this special edition of Your Call, and all of the candidates say pay their fair share. And it's frustrating because I'm not really hearing specifics.
Sure. Well, one very noted tax debate that San Francisco had in recent years was the Twitter tax break.
Right.
And I was not on the board at the time, and I'm well aware that the economy was in the tank. It was right after the financial crash of 08. So the idea is to light an economic flame by using some public dollars when the private sector is so dead. And that was the idea. We wanted to attract some businesses to San Francisco, give them this tax break. If they open up shop in a certain geographic area, mostly around mid-market. So that was the idea behind it. Question is, and we'll never really know the answer to it, though, you know, the likes of Mark Benioff opposed providing that tax break to Twitter and to others. He wasn't in the area of the geographic designation, and he wasn't going to benefit from it, Salesforce, and he didn't think it was necessary. I'm of that opinion as well. I believe these companies would have come to San Francisco anyway. And if you look at a CEO list of 10 reasons why they locate anywhere, taxes is at the bottom of that list. They want to be in an area where there are universities, where there are talented and educated people. There's a synergy when these companies come together. There already was a tech base here in San Francisco and, of course, to the south. And then there's San Francisco, a place where young people want to be and everyone wants to be. There are a lot of reasons why companies will settle here. I don't know that they needed a tax break to do so.
We have a question about this from Art in San Francisco. Can you talk about the extent of Ron Conway's influence on former Mayor Ed Lee?
I can't speak for conversations that I was never a part of, but I think it's pretty clear that from comments that Ron Conway himself has made, that we know there was a very tight relationship, and that at Ed Lee's gravesite, he was there to say that he was embracing Supervisor London Breed to carry on the policies of Ed Lee, and he has shown that commitment in terms of hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars into super PACs to benefit her campaign. And in some cases, not only to help her, but to drop bombs on both Jane Kim and me. I've been on the receiving end. And some of it, we don't even know where it's coming from, because it's not just a billionaire or deep-pocketed special interest giving to a super PAC, and then the voters get to know who contributed that super PAC. The latest game, and I'm very disappointed that the local papers have not written about this, is super PAC gives to super PAC. So it's hide the bean, and I guess the phrase is hide the pea, and then register the super PACs in Sacramento rather than San Francisco, because in Sacramento, the disclosure deadlines are after June 5th. So it's deliberate obfuscation and trying to deny voters the information they need to make informed decisions.
We asked Supervisor Breed, London Breed, about this last week. For the record, Gail Conway, Ron Conway's wife, is spending $200,000 on attack ads against Jane Kim. Evan Williams, Twitter co-founder, has given $100,000 to super PACs supporting London Breed. London Breed's communications director, Tara Moriarty, got back to 48 Hills' Tim Redmond about super PACs with this statement. Mark Leno took thousands of dollars from real estate interests as a legislator in Sacramento and consistently failed at his job to pass Ellis Act reform to protect tenants.
May I respond?
Please.
Thank you for the opportunity. Number one, she is factually wrong. I did succeed in amending the Ellis Act to exempt single-room occupancies. The only legislator in state history to amend the Ellis Act. So that's an inaccurate statement. And in doing so, by exempting SROs, we have protected over 12,000 of San Francisco's most vulnerably housed from homelessness. So I'm very proud of that, and I'll state it clearly. Yes, we also tried to amend the Ellis Act further to give San Francisco the authority to be able to differentiate between speculators for whom the Ellis Act was not written and who were doing so much of the evicting, and landlords for whom the Ellis Act was written. The real estate interests, the ones she claims stuff my pockets and clearly influence my efforts, it was the real estate interests that fought me every year that I tried to amend the Ellis Act. So it is true that there have been super PACs that have benefited me in my years in the legislature. I would respond by saying I put forward the fair campaign promise the first day of my campaign this year to renounce, denounce, and reject any super PAC spending on my behalf or against any of my opponents. I asked all of the other candidates in the race to sign that pledge with me so we could all join hands and tell these special interests, deep-pocketed, unlimited donors, we're not interested. Don't even start. Let us raise our own million-plus dollars and fight our own battles, have our own exchange of ideas without the corrupting influence of your unregulated, unlimited money. Everyone signed the pledge but London Breed, and then within days she had super PACs, multiple ones, supporting her. If we had done that from the start, maybe we could have kept all of this money out. But to say just because I did it in the past makes me a hypocrite or not in a position to make such a pledge, that's a status quo argument. I'm running against the status quo. Let's do things differently now. Doesn't matter what happened in the past. Let's not repeat. Let's do it differently going forward.
Well, yeah, what would you say to people who bring up the past? Because we're getting a few tweets about super PACs and money that you have received in the past.
Well, again, and let me be clear, and this is to some degree in defense of Supervisor Breed. It's not as if super PACs give us money. No one can give any of the candidates, and there is
money
more than $500.
Right.
So these are independent of the campaigns. By law, they're supposed to be a firewall between the super PAC and the campaign. There can be no coordination of message or any strategy. So we can't actually tell someone they can or cannot give or reject anything because there's nothing coming to our campaigns. But we can certainly put out the message we don't want this kind of assistance. And if you look at the numbers, I've received maybe a tenth of super PAC support that London Breed has because I've been the most adamant saying, don't do this. I don't want your help. And mostly folks have agreed. But keep in mind, it's only natural that if I'm getting bombarded with super PAC assaults, those who support me are going to want to respond. And that's what we tried to stop from the start. Because otherwise, it's like a nuclear escalation. One starts, then the other comes back and responds. And then suddenly, the campaigns become incidental. And it's just a battle of the super PACs. Mm. That's what I didn't want to see happen.
And according to reports, about $100,000 has been dropped in Sacramento to fund ads against you, but we're not going to know who those funders are until after the election.
Correct.
And this is what makes people so angry about the system, and this is why we see low voter turnout, unfortunately.
Exactly, which is possibly a strategy of those with the deep pockets. And I authored the Disclose Act in Sacramento for years, which would have required that a follow the source of the money component be in the bill so that we would know exactly who the original donor was, not this nice sounding name from this nice sounding name from this nice sound. No, who actually gave the money, let voters know. And that was a part of the Disclose Act that never got passed into law.
Today, it is Your Call special San Francisco election series. Next Tuesday is Election Day. The next mayor of San Francisco could serve for 10 years and determine the future of the city. This is a very important race. We do have ranked choice voting, so be sure to vote for at least two candidates. If your top choice does not get 50%, your second choice might win. Today, we are joined by former California State Senator Mark Leno. After serving 14 years in the California legislature in 2016, Senator Leno vacated his seat due to state term limit laws. Now he is running for mayor of San Francisco. If you have any questions for Senator Leno, give us a call, 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can also head over to our Facebook page at KALW, click on the video, and then leave a comment there. I want to ask you about Uber and Lyft. We just got news of a fifth suicide in New York. This is just horrific. Yumin Chow had taken a loan out 7 years ago to buy a $700,000 medallion that gave him the right to operate a cab. And I still take cabs, and I interview every cab driver. They all say that their pay has been cut in half because of Uber and Lyft. They are barely making ends meet. Now, I know that this issue is regulated by the California Public Utilities Commission. Unfortunately, we cannot get them to come on the show. But if you become mayor of San Francisco, you will have a major platform to really talk about potential regulations. How would you deal with this issue, and what message would you send to cab drivers?
Well, the basic philosophy is that San Francisco should have the authority and the ability to regulate what goes on our own streets. it should not be dictated by Sacramento. Unfortunately, that is the status quo. We do need to change state law, and there's just very little strong argument to challenge that San Francisco shouldn't have that authority. And yes, drivers do cross county lines, but this can be worked out even if different counties had different regulations. But with over 50,000 cars on our streets that we never planned for, and in fact, the planning department doesn't even account for the fact that the corner of Market and Van Ness is the highest used pickup and drop-off corner when they're planning the transportation impacts of 40-story towers going up on those corners right now, mm-hmm. and plans for more. So this has come very quickly without any planning, and it's having a severe impact on the city, about 170,000 rides a day, battles over curb space, who gets to use it, and again, who's paying a fair share? I'm a small business owner. I pay my fair share. I've got to play by the rules. I didn't get to start a business that was illegal and then go to the Board of Supervisors to make it legal. That frustrates me as a small business owner for the past 40 years. And I know other small business owners feel the same way. So this is going to be a challenge. And given that we don't have much legal leverage, I would like to bring the stakeholders to the table. I'd like to bring the industry into my office and say, this is not sustainable right now for anybody, for your drivers, for our city. Let's work something out.
In New York, taxicab advocates are advocating for regulations on the number of cars that can be on the road. They're also advocating for equity in terms of how much is charged.
Yes.
Would you support something like that?
Without a doubt. No, and it's heartbreaking to see an entire industry destroyed. Now, there are those who would say this is an industry that needed shaking up.
Right.
And that's why the Transportation Network Corporations, TNCs, were able to find a niche and to serve it and to become so popular. But the cost of these rides are less than taxis because, of course, taxis are regulated and they don't have a way to adjust their own prices in a competitive market, which is not fair for them. But keep in mind, these TNCs are not profitable. They're sustained by venture capital money. Venture capital money is underwriting the cost of your cheap Lyft ride or Uber ride. And one could ask, is that sustainable?
Well, we've done.
So to get back to your question, yeah. Yes, it should be a level playing field. Mm. If we're going to have market forces compete, let's have honest market forces compete.
We've had Uber and Lyft drivers on who also say that they're struggling to make ends meet. This issue is on the front page of today's Chronicle. City Attorney Dennis Herrera subpoenaed Uber and Lyft for records of driver pay and benefits, as well as their classification as independent contractors. So we'll definitely continue to do shows about this. Today we are joined by former California State Senator Mark Leno. He vacated his seat due to state term limit laws, and now he is running for mayor of San Francisco. If you have any questions for Senator Leno, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can email yourcall@kalw.org or leave a comment on our Facebook page. Head over to KALW and click on the video there. Let's go to Andy in Redwood City. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Leno.
Hello,
hey,
Andy.
Good morning. I took exception to one of the comments you made earlier in the discussion.
Sure.
About the $15 minimum wage.
Yes.
The problem was around 2015 when you guys passed that bill, we needed $15 then, at that time. I was making $11.50 an hour, making one-fifth of the income I used to make, right? We needed $15 an hour in 2015, not in 2021. I make a little over $15 now, and that's not even enough to pay my rent working for 40 hours a week. So it is insane for you guys to think that that $15 an hour that you passed was a success. You got to get your reality right. It was not a success. You sold out to the Chamber of Commerce in the Senate, and not yourself, but the other Democrats sold out. We needed that $15 immediately. In 2021, we need over $20 an hour at least, and that's probably not even going to be enough. But that's my comment. Again, you're out of reality. We needed more than 15. We need more than 15. And 15 should have been in 2015, right away, immediately, to try to help people.
Thank you, Andy. Senator Leno?
Yes, I would like to respond. First of all, Andy, I hear your anger. I hear your frustration. And certainly there's a lot of pain that you have experienced, as all low-wage workers do. But in terms of reality, which you're accusing me of not being in, no, I knew the reality of the legislature all too well. And this was landmark legislation, even with the gradual increase of our minimum wage. Keep in mind, we had just gone from $8 an hour to $10 an hour the year before I proposed the 15. And my colleagues thought we had completed our work when we got to $10 an hour. I brought up $15, and everyone thought I was crazy. We've done this. We don't need to do it again. And so I fought that battle and lost that first year. I didn't give up. I brought it back another time. And then, thanks to the folks at SEIU and the fight for 15, all the low-wage workers who took to the streets and made this a real issue, it grabbed the attention of the governor when signatures were gathered to put it on the ballot. And so the governor knew that this would pass and that it made better sense for the legislature and the governor to do this, so that if it needed fine-tuning at some point, we wouldn't have to go back to the ballot. So it may not sound sufficient to you, and I appreciate that, that it won't get to $15 an hour fast enough, but it is on its way to $15 an hour. It will be above the federal poverty line. And just to put it in a context, the federal minimum wage is still at $7.25 an hour. So we're doing better here in California. We were the first to get to 15. We will be the first to get to 15 when we get there. And you bet we need to do more.
And there was a lot of pushback from the Chamber of Commerce.
Oh, they oppose this to the very end.
This speaks to a question that Art brings up. How will you avoid the pressures of wealthy San Franciscans on city policy and lobbyists? How will you fight for the common good of San Franciscans instead?
Well, I can give you my pledge and promise, but it's not just words. I've got a body of work over 18 years in public office that show that that's exactly what I do. And I can tell you that my politics have drifted to a much more people-concerned position over time, because I've been around long enough to hear lobbyists and corporate lobbyists make the same argument time and time again, that if you don't vote a certain way, the sky will fall and civilization as we know it will come to an end. And that, of course, never happens. And all we have to do is look what's going on in this country and locally, with the greater income and wealth divide, more and more people are suffering, more and more people are struggling, and we've got to fight harder and harder for the well-being of the people. And getting back to a question you asked earlier about tech, we want a healthy business environment in the city, of course, and they're not mutually exclusive. But my question in any negotiations with developers or with tech or anybody who needs more office space or wants any kind of entitlement or permit from the city, what's in it for San Franciscans? How will our people here in San Francisco benefit? I want to see a lot more local hiring. All these new tens of thousands of new jobs, we shouldn't just presume they're all going to come from out of town. Certainly some will. But what about San Franciscans? We've got underemployed and unemployed San Franciscans. Let's get their wages up with these new jobs. Certainly they can be trained, and we can place them in some of these jobs. That means someone's not being displaced by someone coming in from out of town, not losing their apartment. That means we don't need to build a new housing unit for someone who already lives here. We don't have to expand muni capacity for a worker who already lives here. Local hiring is a big part of this campaign.
And that was the big criticism of the Twitter tax cuts.
There was no requirement.
No requirements.
What's in it for San Franciscans?
Well, thank you for the call. Thank you for the email. Let's go next to Marianne in San Francisco. Hi, Marianne. Welcome to the show.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Sure. I want to know what your plan is, Mark, for rallying people behind our public schools. I think a resilient and healthy community has to have not just good, but great public schools. And I know that we don't have a system in which the mayor runs the public school district. Nonetheless, the mayor can be a big influence on our public school system.
Thank you so much. According to reports, the number of private schools under Ed Lee really shot up, and we are seeing major gaps in our education system here in San Francisco. How will you address that?
Thank you for the question, Marianne. And yes, the achievement gap is still growing, if not stable, and it's a serious problem. Complex in many ways. We not only need to support our teachers, and I would urge everyone to support the ballot measure, which is on this June 5th ballot, to increase teacher pay by 7%. We also have to support our kids, not just get kids to class. And keep in mind, we've got a problem of truancy and chronic absenteeism. When there are 8- and 9-year-olds who are missing 20-30% of the school year, they are never going to catch up in their reading and math. They're more likely to fail. They're more likely to drop out. And a child who drops out before getting a high school diploma has a 7 times greater likelihood of finding his or her way into our criminal justice system. So we have to start very early attending to how we get kids to school and then get them to school prepared to succeed. That means they need to be well-nourished when they get to class. That means they need to be in good health. 500,000 California children will miss school each year for tooth decay, the most prevalent infectious disease that they will experience before age 13, and it's completely preventable, but they need to get to a dentist. So it's layer after layer of issue over issue to make sure we can make sure our teachers are well-supported and that our kids are prepared to succeed. So yes, the mayor can use the bully pulpit of the office to talk about these things, work with the school district. The voters of San Francisco have been generous. About $80 million of our general fund each year goes to supplement the budget of the San Francisco Unified School District. I also want to implement something called the San Francisco Promise, based on a Long Beach, California promise. Not unlike Long Beach, we each have a single unified school district. We each have a community college campus, and we each have a California State University campus. In Long Beach, a promise is made to 4th and 5th and 6th graders that if they focus on their studies and succeed, that there is a place for them at City College. And now here in San Francisco, we have free City College. And I would suggest that if a student gets through the 2 years at City College and gets the AA degree, we have a place for them in our San Francisco State University system. And let's focus and find a way to make sure that we have free state as well as free city. And that will benefit all of these students and their future income possibilities. But also, California is going to have a deficit of 1 million Bachelor of Arts degrees by 2030. New jobs created will demand BAs, and we're going to have 1 million short. So for all good reasons, we need to focus on education without a doubt.
Thank you for the phone call. You can join us with Senator Mark Leno at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. I want to ask you about our homeless crisis. According to the official numbers, over 7,000 people are living on San Francisco's streets. We are seeing a lot more older women now on the streets. Interim Mayor Mark Farrell has been conducting street sweeps where people's, all of their belongings are just thrown in the trash. The shelter waiting list is over 1,000. Do you support these street sweeps? Will they happen if you become mayor?
No, they will not happen unless we have, and it, I wouldn't use the word sweep, I would use move from street to housing, because just shuffling people around is heartless and does not get to the core of the problem. We have a shortage of shelter for people who want to get off the streets. So you had mentioned 7,000. My understanding is that we might have 7,000, 7,500 homeless folks in San Francisco, but about half of them are on the street at any one night. So let's say 3,500 approximately. You likely know, I hope you know, that I have a very serious and detailed plan to end street homelessness, that's the 3,500, by 2020. And how we would get there is recognizing that a report from the Department of Building Inspection, the Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, says there are about 1,500 could be more, could be less, single-room occupancies, SROs, that are empty right now in San Francisco. And I believe it's the mayor's job every day to be in conversation and negotiation with the owners of these properties to find a way that we can move formerly homeless people into these SROs. The concept is housing first. We know that there are people on the street for many reasons, whether you lost your job or someone died, someone got sick, you missed a few paychecks, you lost your apartment, you're on the street. 70% of those on the street were under a roof before they became homeless. It could be a mental or behavioral health issue, physical health issue. It could be drug or alcohol addiction. But to deal with all of these complex human challenges, we need to get people under a roof first, housing first. It's worked in other places. We can't deal successfully with these challenges on a street corner. We waste our investment and no one makes any progress. So I'm hopeful that we can negotiate with the owners of these properties to assure them we will provide the wraparound social services to keep someone successful in their housing once we've moved them from the street to an SRO. As you mentioned, for years now, we've had 1,000 or more people on a waiting list every night trying to get into a shelter bed where you have to be in and out by a certain hour, can't bring your pet, your partner, your belongings, and still 1,000 people would rather be under a roof at night rather than on the street. And we have not expanded our shelter capacity. We've got to do that as well. While we figure out how we're going to build the necessary permanent supportive housing for those folks, but until then, so much better for all of us that they are off the street and in a shelter under a roof until we get that done.
And so many people need a lot of wraparound services.
Yes.
Right now, the city spends just over $240 million on the homeless crisis. San Francisco's $10 billion budget goes into effect on August 1st. This budget includes the ports. It also includes San Francisco International Airport. Angela Alioto often talks about waste. She says if she becomes mayor, she's firing people because she feels like their salaries are too high. No bid contracts are given out. In some cases, the same street is paved 10 times because that's the contract. Do you see waste in this system?
It's not possible that in a $10 billion budget there is not
waste. I should say, where do you see waste in the system?
So there is. And of that $10 billion budget, about $5 billion represents general fund money. The other is state and federal money, which is for specific purposes. So of that $5 billion, if we could squeeze just 3% greater efficiency, just 3%, that's $150 million that we could put towards so many of the needs that San Francisco is facing right now. And keep in mind, if we are, when we are successful in moving people from the street under a roof, there will be a cascade of savings throughout city government. The Department of Public Works is spending $60 million annually to clean our sidewalks and streets, and our sidewalks and streets are completely filthy. So that's a waste of money because that's the symptom and we haven't dealt with the problem. The problem is 3,500 people living where they shouldn't live. Deal with the problem successfully, we'll mitigate the symptoms significantly. We'll save money at the Department of Public Works. We'll save money at the police department, who spend an inordinate amount of time dealing with homeless people. We'll have savings at the fire department, savings in ambulance runs to the emergency room, at the emergency room, at General Hospital. There'll be savings at the Department of Public Health. The longer someone is on the street, their mental, physical, emotional health is severely degraded, and we taxpayers are paying for that cost. So there'll be a lot of savings once we do the right thing.
We have a related question from Marie, who says, can you talk more about housing veterans and houseless youth, especially queer youth, who come to San Francisco for sanctuary?
Something I've been working on for decades now. When I was on the Board of Supervisors back in around 2000, I was successful in creating the first queer youth shelter because so many queer youth do come to San Francisco, kicked out of their hometowns, kicked out of their homes, looking for some refuge, someplace safe to land. Not unlike when I got here, I was already 25 years of age, but looking for a safe, welcoming place to land. But when you're 14 or 15 or 16 and you get here, you think there's going to be someone to sustain you, and we don't have those services, and then they're on the street. Upwards of 50% of the youth on our street identify as LGBTQ. So that is a disproportionately high amount, obviously, but for the reasons I've just described. So yes, there are special needs and special communities that we need to take care of.
I want to ask you about evictions and what you will do to ensure that renters stay in their apartments.
A big focus of this campaign.
Where do you stand on Prop F, which would provide people
right
with legal counsel?
A strong supporter of it. I helped raise some money for it as well.
And Costa Hawkins' repeal on the November ballot?
Yes, yes.
And how would that apply to San Francisco if you become mayor?
Which is that?
The Costa Hawkins repeal.
So the Costa Hawkins repeal, and so people know, Costa Hawkins is a statewide law that was written by the legislature as there were more and more municipalities throughout California that were putting in place rent control laws. So it exempted single-family homes from rent control. It also prevented any kind of vacancy control. So if it is repealed, it doesn't do anything other than give back to local governments the authority to be able to debate these issues and make decisions for their own locality. So as mayor, I would lead that conversation, and it will be a very challenging one because we'd be changing the rules of property ownership mid-game. And so we want to make sure that it is fair for both those who have mortgages and need to be able to receive income sufficient to be able to meet those mortgage payments, and at the same time protect tenants from the exorbitant rent increases we see in non-rent controlled units, 20, 30, 40%. And that's just not possible for people. They obviously will lose their homes. So it's bringing stakeholders together to find a way to make it right for everybody, protect tenants, make it fair for property owners, and that's what the repeal of Costa Hawkins would allow San Francisco to do.
And I also want to ask you about affordable housing. I wish we had another hour because there's just so much. SB 827, Senator Scott Wiener's bill, got a lot of attention. It was very controversial. We have done a lot of shows about climate change and how that's affecting the Bay Area. Mission Bay is one of San Francisco's lowest lying areas. There's so much development there, and yet it's vulnerable to future sea level rise, storm surges, and flooding. Spur says that we're going to need to raise seawalls. A new report out of UC Berkeley finds that portions of Treasure Island, San Francisco, and SFO are sinking so fast that by the end of the century, Treasure Island could be underwater. So as we say, build, 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 what about looking forward and looking at the consequences of all of this building?
I've seen some area maps that would suggest that if climate change proceeds as we expect and is predicted, that the shoreline of San Francisco could look in 2100 as it did in 1850,
yep,
before all the landfill allowed for the financial district and so much of our port property. That would all be submerged. So Spur, if someone's interested, I was just there the other day on their website, has a great research paper on all the alternative ways to deal with sea level rise, from floatable developments to floodable developments, recreating wetlands, which is a natural way to deal with it, elevated developments, not unlike what they're doing in New Orleans since Hurricane Katrina. There are a variety of ways to approach it. Each have their pros and cons, each have their expenses, but it's fascinating, and I'm not an engineer, so I can't tell you in great detail how each of these works, but there's also armoring, there are barriers, creating dam-like structures outside the Golden Gate. Variety of ways to deal with it, but we have to deal with it.
I want to also ask you about neglected neighborhoods in San Francisco. Unfortunately, this just doesn't get the attention it deserves. We had three young girls on our show from Bayview Hunters Point, which is only 5 minutes from our station. They talked about having to deal with gunshots, poverty, just being afraid on a regular basis because we know that poverty leads to violence. You look at Sunnydale, another neglected neighborhood. Now, these neighborhoods are 20 minutes from Twitter and Salesforce. And it's really shameful that these young people don't have basic resources in many cases. I mean, there are great organizations trying to do a lot with a very little. These people want to go to college. And I mean, the stories they had, they should be actually interviewing the mayoral candidates. What would you do to actually reach out to these neglected neighborhoods? And why in a city with so much wealth do we see this?
There's so many ways to answer that question, Rose, and I know we have limited time, but one point I would make is they're not only 20 minutes from Twitter and the tech center, but they're 10 minutes from the Cow Palace, excuse my tongue. And I'd been fighting for 10 years to get rid of the gun shows at the Cow Palace. Mm. This is a little spit of land that straddles the San Mateo and San Francisco County borders, owned by the state. But the board of supervisors of each county, by unanimous votes, have said they don't want a gun show at the Cow Palace. And their neighbors don't want it. And these neighborhoods experience some of the highest rates of gun violence and gun acquisition.
And incarceration.
And incarceration. And they're right next to the Cow Palace, and we should get rid of that gun show.
Well, what would you do to address poverty in these areas? Because we know that that leads to incarceration and violence.
We have to fix and improve our educational system. That is the key to every opportunity, certainly. And then I'm going to come back to local hiring. We've got to make sure that all of these much better paying jobs are afforded the opportunity of San Franciscans to apply and get trained and then get hired. But it starts with education.
Just quickly, Heather says, how do you feel about the prop to increase taxes for public schools? Is this the one we talked about, Prop G?
Prop G.
Yes, you support that.
Yes, indeed.
Okay. And just quickly, you have endorsed Jane Kim for your number two.
I also, when I voted last week, voted number two for Jane Kim.
And can you talk about, just quickly, ranked choice voting? The Chronicle says it's gaming the system. How do you describe it?
It is the system. It's called ranked choice. I, like all voters, get to have a ranked choice. So that's what I did, and that's what Jane Kim did when she said she'd be voting for me, number two. It's as simple as 1, 2, 3. You can vote for your first and or your second and or your third. What you don't want to do is put the same name down three times, because that does nothing. But do as you feel and follow your heart. But it is a very viable way of electing someone.
Right now, if the top candidate, if the number one candidate, if your first choice doesn't get 50%, your second choice might win.
That is correct.
And if you're not registered to vote, there's a new law in California. You can register up to Election Day.
Yes, you can go to City Hall today if you're not registered and then vote. You can, but you have to do it at City Hall at this point.
Okay, so if you or someone you know is not registered, let them know that they can go to City Hall and register up until Election Day.
Up until Election Day.
And then vote there.
And vote there.
Former State Senator Mark Leno is running for mayor of San Francisco. Senator Leno, thank you for coming in. Thanks for your time.
It's always my great pleasure, Rose. Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. And thanks to Laura Wenis for line producing. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.